And a good Saturday morning to you, Denny Long, back. Well, I shouldn't say back. Well, I do come back to the By the Art showroom once in a while. That's where we're doing our shows today here in Jordan, Minnesota. And I urge you, if you're in the neighborhood or have the time to come and visit this beautiful showroom, this is where we're doing our shows, as I said. And the good folks at By the Art, who are always love to host folks, they put on a great spread, coffee, good things to eat. And it's excuse me, Mary Meyer from the U of M is with us on the line. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. Happy Memorial Day.
Yes, it is.
You're outside.
And it's, well, we're not outside, but we could be outside. It's a fresh day. But before we get into the show, and Mary's going to be answering all those lawn and garden questions as usual. But Jake from By the Art is back with us. And if you hadn't heard that you guys are kind of giving away things every hour here.
That's right. Yeah, we're on prize number two already here this morning.
What's this one now?
This one is four tickets to to see the local nine. I got to keep it. I got to think how to say it. Watch a baseball game here.
Yes.
They're great seats, too. Yeah. It's a set of four. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. And all they have to do is drive down here.
That's right. Must be present to win.
And, you know, you've got a kind of a new route to get here now.
Well, yeah, we do. No, thanks for bringing that up, Denny. Yeah, the traditional, we've been here for 12 years, and they decided to put an overpass in, which was all for the better. But make sure you punch it in your GPS, but don't always believe what it says either.
So. Isn't that true? But it's very easy.
Yeah,
drive
you can't miss us off 169.
Now, do we have a winner, though?
We do. We have Richard from St. Paul is our winner of the Twins. So congrats, yeah. Richard. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. That's great. And you're going to be back next hour.
I will be back next hour to give away a rocking chair from By the Art.
Good deal. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Very good. Jake from By the Yard. You see him in all those commercials. Jake's a great guy. We've had a chance to be colleagues for quite a few years now. In fact, for those, and Ryan Perpich, our producer, is here. Ryan and Mary is on the horn answering those questions. It seems like, for me, this is like a high school reunion. People are stopping by. Jimmy Erickson, producer, is here. Bosses are here, and folks that we have traveled with Mary on Good Neighbor tours, and it's just a great to visit with these folks. But in the meantime, we're going to put you back to work as usual. And is this the weekend we start planting finally, Mary? I'm looking at these daytime temperatures. Wow, this is when we do some outdoor work, right?
Yes, definitely, Denny. I think we can finally start. We've had some ups and downs with cold weather, but yes, I have planted my tomatoes and my peppers outside. And yes, I think we are pretty much good to go. And it's amazing. I saw some tropical plants for sale at one of the big box stores that I've never seen for sale in Minnesota. Olives. Mediterranean olives. These are like the olives we eat, really. And figs and really table grapes that are not hardy in Minnesota, but wonderful plants that you can buy now. So, yes, I think it's a go. It is a go.
All right. You have.
We wait for that time, but it's we are there.
88 on Monday is predicted. Wow. All right, I'm looking at some text messages. If you have any kind of a lawn and garden question, you can phone it in. If you want to chat with Mary, that's always great. Or just send a text, whatever is easier. 651-461-9226. Here's a well-established 20-plus years lilac spreading and sending up shoots, they say, that are getting too close to our pool area. When and how can these shoots be transplanted?
You could do that right now. Lilacs are very hardy, and yes, they can sucker out and have additional shoots. So I would say, yes, you need a sharp shovel or spade that's actually going to cut off the main root. The smaller plants are probably going to be easier, but you could do that right now. You could transplant lilacs.
Very good. Hello, the texter says, my bee balm is not up yet. Is it usually late? I'm up in Pine City.
My bee balm is about 6 inches tall. So let's see, Pine City a little bit cooler. I would wait maybe another week or so, but there are some different selections of bee balm that are not quite as hardy. Bee balm, or this is Monardo, one of our native plants. is native to most of the eastern United States, but there are some forms from the south that are not as hardy. But I would wait maybe one more week, but it should be coming up soon. If not, try again with another bee balm.
Very good. A listener wants to know via text, how often should I fertilize my rhubarb throughout the year?
Well, rhubarb, yes, our great big rhubarb is growing. I'm sure many of our listeners have already picked rhubarb. Maybe you're giving away rhubarb already. In the springtime is usually when we fertilize it. And usually once a year in the spring is enough. Many people use compost for rhubarb. It does respond very well to compost and composted cow manure. It really does like that. But once a year in the spring should be sufficient. And of course, if you're really not sure about your soil or haven't had a soil test before, it's always a great idea to have a soil test. You can do the mail in your soil to the University of Minnesota or take it over to St. Paul. That's a really great way to figure out what's the baseline, what are you actually working with.
All right. This listener just received some tulip bulbs as a gift. What do we do now, they ask?
Wow. No kidding. I wonder where they got those. But tulips are really a seasonal thing that we plant in the fall, and then they bloom in the spring. I'm wondering if these have been held from last year and just did not get in the ground last fall. Yeah, so if I were you, I'd plant them as soon as possible. Now, you won't see anything from these tulips until next spring when they hopefully will flower. But if they have been outside of the ground for an indefinite amount of time, they may have dried up. But plant them as soon as possible.
All right, let's see. We have a caller. Jim is calling in from St. Francis this morning. Jim, what is your question for Mary?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for being on available. I have a problem with my tomatoes. I call it blight. I would like to ask you two questions regarding blight. Where the heck does it come from? It wasn't always in this garden space. And the second question would be, would you recommend to me tomato varieties that are resistant to blight? I hear there are some, but nobody ever seems to want to name them. Thank you.
Oh, yes, Jim. Great questions. Where does tomato blight come from? It's ubiquitous once you start growing tomatoes. So it comes from the previous year, tomato pieces of the plant that are left in the soil, and it's really difficult to clean up those pieces all together. So even if you clean up your garden in the fall, remove the plants, there are often still some leaves that have died. And so once you have the fungal blights in your soil, they tend to be very difficult to get rid of. That's why we talk about rotation, moving plants around. But if you have a smaller garden, that's really impractical and that's hard to do. Your best bet is what you say, getting varieties that are resistant to blight. And there are many that are resistant to blight, and sometimes they have the letters for the resistance to specific blights on the label, and sometimes they don't. So the best thing to do is really to look up on Cornell University has a huge tomato Excel spreadsheet with several hundred varieties on, and they show you the resistance to the blights. So early blight has some resistance. Many cultivars have resistance. Late blight, there's very few that have resistance to late blight, but it really does vary. So the key is getting resistant varieties. And so some of the ones I plant, Jetstar, Early Girl, Celebrity, the new improved varieties, newer varieties are pretty much all disease resistant. Older heirloom varieties have very little resistance. So planting a variety of kinds is another way to minimize the damage. So hopefully that's helpful. But good luck, Jim.
Very good. Mary, we're going to take a bit of a break here. Be back on the other side. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Mary Meyer from the U of M, by all means, call it in or text it in, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, we're broadcasting live from the By the Yard showroom here in Jordan, Minnesota on this holiday weekend. Stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our garden show, lawn and garden show here. We've got so many good folks here. It's certainly fun visiting with all of them. Denny Long, producer Ryan Perpich, Josh back downtown holding the show together, welcoming Mary Meyer from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions today, either by phone or by text. And Mary, we have both. So let's get back to it. Let's grab a phone call. Derek, I believe, is calling in from Minneapolis this morning. Thank you for waiting, Derek. What is your question for Mary? Maybe Derek is having some coffee. All right.
Oh, sorry. Sorry,
there he is. Okay.
Yeah, Derek. Sorry about that. I've got a couple of pickling cucumber sprouts that aren't looking the greatest, but I'm looking to plant here soon. I'm just wondering for some advice that if they'll kick back, they'll come back after I plant them.
Hopefully they will, Derek. Cucumbers like the hot weather. They don't like cold temperatures. So below 50 degrees, even below 60 degrees, they don't like that. So it's difficult to say. Sometimes when young, warm tropical plants, when they get cold temperatures, sometimes that chilling is hard for them to grow out of. And even the shock of moving outside where it's cooler when they've been grown indoors can be a shock. I would go ahead and plant those outside. Hopefully they will recover. But I would also consider planting some seeds if you still have some seeds of the type that you want, the pickling cucumber. Just plant the seeds outside as well. Because it's tough to say. Chilling injury on the plants that like the warm conditions is difficult to grow out of.
All right, Derek, thank you for the call. Let's before we get back to the text, let's grab another call. Chris, I believe, calling in from Maple Plain. Thank you, Chris. What is your question for Mary?
Hi, Mary. Say, I've got a 12-by-12 vegetable garden. The last 2 years, one end of the garden had, I don't know if they're carpenter ants or what they are, but I'm trying to get rid of them. I don't know if there's anything I can put on there that won't harm the vegetables or make it so I can't eat the vegetables, or if I put stuff on the outside. Any thoughts?
I would try a couple of things that are not chemical, Chris. If you can carefully dig around and find the center of the ant and maybe remove the queen, that is kind of difficult, but disturbance. So disturbing, tilling, digging around in the area, that's helpful. The other thing is hot water, really hot water, boiling hot water poured on ants will kill them. Now, of course, that will kill plants that are in the area too, but if you're just getting ready and just planting your garden and you haven't planted it yet, you can put the hot water on the area where the ants are. So I would try that before I try any chemicals. If that doesn't work, you can buy chemicals that will kill ants, and you just have to be very careful about putting them on right in that area, not on the area where your vegetables are. So hopefully you can confine the area and take care of that. Now, the ants specifically are not really going to hurt your vegetables that much. There are a lot of ground ants that are not a problem. So unless you see huge mounds in an area, you might be able to get by with a few ants and they won't hurt your actual vegetables.
Very good. Thank you, Chris, for that call. Let's grab a couple of text messages. This listener saw at a golf course they used a pelletized grass seed on bare spots. Is this any good and where can I find it? Do you know anything about it?
Well, that's interesting. I'm wondering if that actually was seed that you saw in the pellets. Sometimes bare spots, especially on a golf course, they get what is known as hydrophobic. They really repel water. They're really, really, really dry, and they have a difficult time getting these areas wet. I wonder if that was more of a wetting agent that you saw or something that wasn't seed. But you can buy pelleted seed. We don't usually see it for grass. I wonder what John Trappi, our turf expert, would say about that, because most of the time turf seed is not pelleted. The seed is large enough, and you want the quantity of it that it really isn't pelleted. We see pelleted seed on tiny seed like carrots and lettuce that we use for gardening, where it's difficult. The seed's so small, it can kind of get lost. But yeah, I don't know what that was. You know, I guess if I was really interested, I would take a picture of those pellets and put it into one of the, you know, the search engines and see what comes up with that to figure out what it was. Or maybe ask the employees at the golf course.
No, that's a good question, too. Ask those, yeah. Interesting question. Another listener wants to know, how do I eradicate, lily of the valley?
Oh, how can such a lovely plant be so aggressive? Lily of the Valley, so beautiful, the wonderful fragrance, a great ground cover for very difficult sites. You got to remove the rhizomes, and that means really digging out the plants and their root system, and then they have this parallel root system to the ground. So if you have a piece of that root left, they can re-sprout. It's difficult. Of course, you can use a chemical that kills everything. That's an option. But I would try digging it out or planting something that's equally competitive, like some of the perennial geraniums are quite aggressive. I do love Lily of the Valley. I have it in several locations in my yard. But yes, it's an aggressive plant.
We're going to break for, weather coming up in a minute or two, and I'm looking at another text that says this. I have catmint plants, which have become flat. Is it just getting ready to bloom? Will it start growing in the middle? What causes this, and what should I do to prevent this? Catmint.
I think this is a case of maybe too shady, or just the specific type of catmint that you have. Sometimes it sounds like a soft growth, something that's grown quickly and then becomes floppy. It doesn't have a stiff or strong enough stem. So if full sun is the best location for catmint, and otherwise, this is a plant, though, that you can cut it back repeatedly. I'd wait till it flowers and then cut it back in half, and it can reflower again. So catmint is really quite a tough and hardy plant, but I think it has more to do with either the location or the type that you have.
Okay, Mary, let's take a quick break. Maybe when we come back, let's hear what's going on maybe at the Arboretum. We always like to talk about that great place. Let's do that right after the break for weather. So stay with us here on News Talk A3O WCCO. It's a Saturday in CCO and we talk lawns and gardens. This time we are broadcasting live from the By the Yard showroom. Just a quick drive from the Twin Cities in Jordan, Minnesota. A lot of great folks here coming to visit and say hi and having a little snack, a little coffee, something to eat. If you have a time to do that very thing, look at some furniture, too, while you're here. You can sit down and relax and have some chow. That's always good to do. In the meantime, Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering those lawn and garden questions. And Mary, we always like to kind of feature what's going on at the Arboretum, and there's always something. I don't care what season we're talking about, but lots going on right now.
Oh, that's so true, Denny. In the spring, there's so many things flowering at the Arboretum. The azaleas are beautiful. Lilacs, iris, the horse chestnuts are flowering. You know, these are our big trees, the Asclepias. They are just beautiful trees that are flowering. There's still several wildflowers that are flowering in the wildflower gardens. And this is May market weekend. So there are special vendors, plant-related vendors that are there at the Arboretum. And that is free and live music. And the May markets this weekend, this is free with entry to the Arboretum. Arboretum. You do need a ticket to get into the Arboretum on the weekends, but there are plenty of tickets available. Easy to go to the website and sign up for your ticket and then drive to the Arboretum. You know, Denny, the Arboretum is not packed on Memorial Day. It
really?
Is a weekend. Yeah, many people go other locations, further north or different locations.
That's true.
And yeah, and Memorial Day weekend tends to be a wonderful time to visit the Arboretum. It's the gardens are beautiful. It's warm enough to walk outside, and it's not real crowded. And we have, of course, Rootstock, the new cafe. It's a wonderful place to eat. So a great thing to do, get to the Arboretum. And, of course, it's open on Monday. The Arboretum is definitely open on Memorial Day.
Oh, take advantage of that. That's a good tip.
Yeah.
All right. We have callers. We have texters. Let's get back to it. Lana is calling in from Glencoe, I believe, this morning. Lana, thanks for waiting. What is your question for Mary?
Okay, good morning. I have a purple sand cherry bush that has a tree growing in it for the last 3 years, and I do cut it down. I'm wondering, is there a way that I heard that I could wrap tinfoil around it and then put Roundup on the cut? Would that hurt the bush? I've tried to dig it out, and it's impossible.
Oh, good for you. So, yes, I was going to say try to dig it out, but sometimes the roots are old enough and more persistent. So, yes, if you put Roundup or glyphosate on a paper towel or something that you then rub the green tissue of the plant that you want to get rid of, that can work. You just have to be real careful that you don't get any of that chemical on your sand cherry that's, of course, right around it. But if you, you could definitely could try that. The thing is, glyphosate, the Roundup, is taken up by green tissue. So you have to get some of that on the active growing tissue, either the cambium, which is a growing part on the tree, or the green leaves itself.
All right. Thank you, Lana. Hope that helped. Let's go to Pete, and then we'll grab some text. Pete's calling in from Mound this morning. Hi, Pete. What is your question?
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have questions about asparagus, actually. We have a plot that's 20 years old and has always been prolific. And this year, for some reason, all the sprouts that are coming up are like pencil thin. There's nothing that's as big as your thumb. And then I noticed while I was in the grocery store the other day, all the asparagus they were selling in the grocery store was also that pencil thin thing. Any opinion on what's happening?
I think your asparagus, Pete, needs more fertilizer. So, again, you could start with a soil test, but asparagus really, as it gets older and many, many years, it can get just deterioration. Asparagus likes compost, cow manure especially, but regular fertilizer like 5-10-10 or 5-10-5 fertilizer to put that on, I think, would be very helpful. So that's a soil test would be great, but 20 years old in the same location, you need to fertilize this every spring. And I assume it's in full sun. It's grown well before. But if things have changed conditions with the trees around it, if it's shadier, that could be another determinant factor because it's not getting as much light if the shade conditions change. The pencil-thin asparagus that you see in the stores, yes, sometimes I find that frustrating. But that, again, is just a condition of the amount of nutrients that were available to those spears when they grew. So it varies, but the really thin kind I don't find as desirable as ones that are bigger. But hopefully that answers your question, Pete.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate the call. 651-461-9226. Call it in or text it in. Speaking of text, here's one. Texas says, now that ornamental crabs have bloomed and leafed out, have noticed a few dead branches about 1 to 2 inch diameter. Can I remove or should I wait until they're dormant?
You can go ahead and prune those now. And yes, whenever you see dead branches, you can take them out of the tree. But this is a good time to do pruning. In fact, I need to prune some of my apple tree that I didn't get to. It's harder now when the leaves get out. You can't see the architecture of the tree as well. But this is a good time to prune a crab apple.
Very good. Good morning, Texter says, my question is, the rhubarb is flowering. Can I cut the flower heads off and plant the seeds? And if so, how do I go about doing that? Is there any special recipe?
You should cut the flower stalks off of rhubarb. They can be big and dramatic, but that just takes nutrients from the plant that you really want. Instead of seed, you really want it to go to the leaves and what we're going to be eating and harvesting from rhubarb. I have never grown rhubarb from seed, but the thing is, you'd have to make the decision that you want seed more than you want plants to harvest or the leaves to harvest. So if you make that decision, realize that you might be compromising your plant and have less to harvest. You got to wait for the seed to mature. So it's white to begin with, and then it's brown when it's mature. So it could take a couple, I would say 4 to 6 weeks of leaving that flower head up there till the seeds mature. And then you'd collect the seed and then sow the seed. And we're talking multiple years here. So many years to get the rhubarb to grow from seed to be a big enough plant that then you would harvest. Most people don't do that. Most people cut the seeds off and just harvest the plant that they have.
All right. Texter asked this question, Mary. What is the best liquid herbicide for a type sprayer to kill dandelions in the yard? I don't want any fertilizer, but what do you think? I know, of course, the bees want those dandelions, but what about getting rid of the dandelions with a sprayer?
Yes, so what you need to look for the chemicals and read the label in the garden center store. You definitely can find herbicides that do not have fertilizer. These are usually liquid chemicals concentrated in a bottle that you put on the end of a hose sprayer, or you dilute and put in another sprayer. So the granular herbicide only is difficult to find because that's usually got fertilizer with it. But you can find just the herbicides to kill dandelions. With all herbicides and all of our pesticides, you have to be very careful and read the label. The label will tell you about the temperature that it needs to be when you put this chemical on, how to properly apply it, cleanup procedures, and the safety equipment that you should be wearing yourself. So read the label, but that will tell you if it will harm other plants around it. There are some herbicides on the market now for lawn chemicals that are damaging to trees and shrubs. So dicamba is one that I saw recently, and dicamba is, you have to be very careful putting that on repeatedly over trees and shrubs because that has a history of damaging trees and shrubs.
Like you said, always read the directions.
Read
always.
The label, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shirley's calling in from Waseca, I believe, this morning. Thank you, Shirley. What is your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I got two honeyberry bushes that I bought this year, and I have no idea really how to put them in. Is there any special thing I need to do, and how far apart do I need to put them? I got two different types.
Oh, this is great, Shirley. Good for you. I have not grown honeyberries yet, but this is a newer type of edible shrub that is hardy and good for us in Minnesota. So I would say I would put these 3 or 4 feet apart and then really prepare the hole well and try to make sure that when you plant the container plant, that you keep it level with the top of the container, level with the top of the soil. So don't plant it too deeply, in other words. And then I'd make a ring around it, a basin to hold the water when you actually water it, that the water will stay around the area and not run off. So you will need to think about watering them on a regular basis, especially because our rain has been so erratic. But I would go ahead and plant them now, and hopefully they will not be too root-bound in the container. I'd look at the roots and see if they're really tight and root-bound, you might want to cut some of the bottom of the roots so that they will spread out from the container once you put it in the soil.
Looking at a text, I think, is a good question. I think many of us have this at home in the drawers. We have hundreds of old flower and vegetable seed packets, this texter says. How do you know if they're still fertile to plant? How old is too old?
The only way you really can tell is if you go ahead and plant those.
Yeah.
Or do you can also do a test in paper towels, wet paper towels, and put the seed, 10 or 20 of the seeds there, and then see what germinates in a week or so. The older the seed, the less likely it will germinate. So I would say 10 years, forget it. Nothing's going to germinate if it's 10 years old, very little. 5 years, maybe you might get 50%, 40% germination. If it's just 1 or 2 years, you probably get 60, 70% germination. It does vary by type of seed. Some seed is short-lived. But if you want to try some, you could always put some in paper towels and see what comes out. Then you can watch it. But the older it is, the less likely it's going to germinate.
Let's grab one more text before we break. Texter is curious if a bee lawn will be able to hold its ground against the neighbor's creeping bellflower and quackgrass. Thanks for the help.
Oh, gosh. Well, clover, the white clover that's in the bee lawns, yes, this is a very competitive plant. Creeping bellflower is really difficult. And creeping bellflower, though, if you mow that off, that really sets it back. So if it's in some, but if it's in a flower bed and it's just that creeping bellflower, that is really difficult. I would use a lot of white clover because that can be very competitive in itself. The other one, creeping bellflower, what was the other plant?
Quackgrass.
Oh, quackgrass. Oh, gosh. Both of these are terribly difficult.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh,
I thought it was going to be Creeping Charlie. But no, it's quackgrass. Both very, very tough. Yes.
All right.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. All right. Mary, hang on, please. We'll take a quick break. We have more texts to have help folks out. And Ryan Perpich, my producer, is here too, Ryan. And just a little teaser. We have, how can I put it, my replacement. Of course, we've got one more show to do, right?
That's right, yes.
Next Saturday will be my last show here on CCO, and yours too.
That's right.
But in the meantime, we have a special guest who's going to be visiting here. I'm not supposed to.
I don't think you're supposed to say any of this, but we're just going to go.
You know, are they going to fire me? What are they going to do? So I'm not worried about it, but we'll find out who's going to be sitting in that chair back in the studio after my last show next week. We'll do that right after 9 o'clock. By the way, Andy Lindis is here in person to answer those home improvement questions next hour as well. So stay with us. We're broadcasting live from the By the Yard showroom here in Jordan, Minnesota. Great folks, great furniture. Come and see us if you can here. News Talk 830 WCCO. We're back with our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering those very questions for us, either on the phone or via text. And Mary, as usual, we have tons of text messages. But we have a question here from our studio audience. Actually, it's producer Ryan Perpich. Ryan, you were just about to ask me something. What was the question for Mary?
Well, pertains to what a lot of Minnesotans are worried about this time of year, and it's timing of planting, and specifically hydrangeas. Have I missed the window to plant hydrangeas, Mary?
No, not at all, Ryan.
Oh,
go
good.
For it. It's perfect timing, and there's so many hydrangeas to choose from. Plant more than one. There's a wonderful selection out there. You haven't missed it at all.
What is there a specific deadline in Minnesota generally to plant hydrangeas at this in the spring, early summer?
No, there is not a deadline. You could plant them when they're grown in containers at the garden center. You could plant as long as they have a month. 6 weeks is ideal, but a month before it gets really cold.
Oh.
So you could, yeah, you've got a big window here. So that means you go for it.
Beautiful. Thank you. That's what I need to know here.
Another list of something to do when you get back home.
Exactly.
Thanks, Mary. A texter wants to know if dead branches on a living oak tree need to be pruned. Do I need to seal those cuts?
Definitely. Definitely. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure I'd take anything off an oak tree.
This time
but
of year.
All the growing season, with oak wilt being as prevalent as it is, we really recommend dormant, dead of winter only pruning on the oaks.
Texter wants to know, how often should I use Milorganite on our trees and plants? Is there such a thing as using too much and too early?
Well, I suppose there is such a thing as using too much if you did it every month or something like that. I only do it once a year. I use once a year Milorganite on my lawn in the fall, but not late in the fall. Usually around Labor Day is when I use Milorganite. So Milorganite is slow-release organic fertilizer, and for a long time it had no recommendation for edible gardens. But it does now on the label. But trees and shrubs, once a year, twice a year at the most is really all you need to do it. But here again, if you really have never had a soil test, you have no idea if what the nutrient levels are in your soil. And many of the phosphorus and potassium levels in Minnesota soils are just fine. So I would say have a soil test, but once, twice a year at the most for Milorganite application.
I'm looking at a text, Mary, and I think I know your answer to this one. The texter says, I trimmed the bottom branches of a Colorado blue spruce to be able to, mow under them. Can I plant grass seed in the bare areas under them?
Well, you can. You can try the fine fescues or a shady lawn mix. That's a tough site for grass.
Yeah,
grass would really rather have sun. It's very dry in those locations. So you might be better off with a ground cover plant, a vinca, some of the perennial geraniums, hostas might grow better there. Or you can just use a mulch and not have an area. But it all really depends on how much sunlight it gets, sunlight, water, and then the competition with the tree roots makes that for a difficult location.
I've noticed, texter says, many dead ash trees in neighborhoods. Should those trees be cut down, or is it okay to leave them as is?
They really should be removed, and I know the city of Plymouth is doing a good job of removing the dead ash. They actually can harbor the insects, and the insects, of course, will go from the dead ash to a live ash. And then at a certain point, they become a hazard if they're going to fall down on an electrical line or fall down on a person. So most cities are actually removing them.
All right. Let's grab another phone call. Bill calling in from Waverly this morning. Thank you, Bill. What is your question for Mary?
Well, I was wondering how you control false spirea.
Oh, another more difficult plant to control. So I would say with false spirea that regularly cutting that back should help to control. If you can mow it or regularly cut it back, or actually if you can pull it out and remove the roots, I would try that.
All right. Two of my hydrangea trees, texter says, which were over 10 years old, did not come back this spring. Was the winter particularly hard on hydrangeas last year? And what's another possible reason for them to have died?
Well, this is hydrangeas, right?
Yes.
That's what you see. Yes, yeah, hydrangea. Yeah, the hydrangea macrophylla, the one kind of hydrangea, is marginally hardy for us in Minnesota, and it's slow to come out in the springtime. The paniculata and the arborescence, those other types are much hardier. So I would wait probably till June 15th to make sure the hydrangea is not coming back. But there are just some types of hydrangeas that are very slow and without a lot of water, which we didn't have a lot of water last fall. Some hydrangeas just don't do as well as others in Minnesota. So that it's so difficult because they're hydrangeas. They're easy, hardy hydrangeas like the bigger paniculatas. And then the macrophyllas are just not as tough and hardy. So it really depends on what kind you have. I'd wait a couple more weeks.
Couple of minutes to go on the show, Mary. Let's grab another text if we can. A lawn question. The texter wants to know, can I seed my lawn right now? Well, we've had some cool weather overnight. So that would have been great, huh?
Yes, cool, rainy weather. Yes, you can definitely put the seed down right now. The critical thing at this point is making sure it has enough moisture. So there is good soil moisture in my garden right now. I was fortunate I had about an inch of rain in the last week. But the soil moisture is critical, getting good seed-soil contact, and then making sure that you water it afterwards.
I want to make one mention before we say goodbye today, Mary, and that is I wanted to mention the website, extension.umn.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, .edu. It's a great resource. You can find all sorts of good things on there. And if you didn't get your question answered today, right, Mary, you could ask a master gardener.
Exactly, Denny. And, yes, I'll tell you that I am sitting here with this website open. Because, right, if I don't know the answer, I'm looking it up. And one of the places I look it up is extension.umn.edu. So the website is always changing. There are always new things up there. But what's wrong with my plant? What insect is this? What weed is this? Really, the best recommendations for our northern gardens, and specifically for Minnesota, extension.umn.edu.
Mary? Right? It has been a pleasure working with you all these years, and I know that Julie will be on for my final show next week. But in the meantime, we'll stay in touch. Let's just say that,
we'll stay in touch. Good gardening, Denny. You can always call me for garden questions. This has been a wonderful thing. I know we've helped a lot of people gardening, but it's been truly a pleasure to work with you. Thank you, Denny.
Thank you. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Andy Lindis is here. We're going to talk home improvement next hour here. We're broadcasting live here at the By the Yard Showroom in Jordan, Minnesota on News Talk 830 WCCO.